The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day, oral questions put by members. The time now is 3:05. We'll go to 4:05. Remind members that all electronic devices are to be turned off. And I'll recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, last week we got a glimpse into how this government is going to handle the finances of our province. They're going to spend $278 million they don't have to pay a bill that isn't due until next March. When the previous government front-loaded their budget in the spring, the NDP caucus cried foul. In fact, the Premier called it a fudget budget. So my question to the Premier is, how is the NDP financial game any different than the Conservative shell game?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member opposite for the question. The member opposite is quite right when he says this was a practice that was brought into the budgeting process by the former Conservative government. They also signed a three-year MOU with the universities, and we felt that a budget which showed that there was a little or nothing in it for university spending was not appropriate. We felt that the best thing that we could do is to ensure that the people who put that practice into place actually took responsibility for it, Mr. Speaker. So we moved the funding for the MOU forward to reflect what the previous government had done.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it was a practice that 3 months ago that Premier said was wrong, and all of a sudden today it's right. One set of rules for one government, another set of rules for this government. Mr. Speaker, borrowing money this year to pay a bill that isn't due until next year comes at a cost. The motivation is political. It's about trying to blame the former government for a decision that this government is making today, a decision that will cost Nova Scotians millions of dollars. So my question to the Premier is, how much is this latest financial trick going to cost the taxpayers of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The characterization by the member opposite is simply incorrect. The Leader doesn't understand the manner in which the financing for the province takes place. The Department of Finance doesn't do its budgeting on a per-transaction basis. The Department of Finance says that this will be part of the ebb and flow of the financing they do, and the answer for them is it's at no cost to the province.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Free, Mr. Speaker, it's free! Imagine how many Nova Scotians would like to borrow money free. This Premier said we have a $590 million deficit. That means this government must borrow that money. $278 million of that money will not be required to pay a bill for next year. It's not free, Mr. Premier, and you know it. It's a shell game you're playing. You knew it back in June, and you know it now. How much will this cost the people of Nova Scotia? You have the entire Department of Finance. They'll tell you, and they'll tell you without playing political games with it, the true cost of how much this cost. What will it cost the people of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The answer that I gave the Leader of the Opposition, of course, is the answer that came from the Finance Department. But, Mr. Speaker, I'll tell you what, Mr. Speaker, what we won't do is what the member's office had proposed, which was to add another $548 million to the books of the province. Of course, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to table the editorial from the Chronicle Herald called "So Who Ate Page 34?" That was the editorial on the plan of the Liberals where they couldn't explain where they were going to pay for anything they promised, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable, the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. In a wide-ranging interview with the Globe and Mail and their readers on July 13th, the Honourable Premier replied to a question from a Graham Stanley who wanted to know if the Premier felt that he might encounter some civil service resistance to NDP plans. Premier answered, and I quote, "I have always said we have a talented and professional civil service in Nova Scotia," end of quote. My question for the Premier today is, if he has such profound respect for Nova Scotia's civil service, why did he feel it necessary to have an independent firm review the province's finances at a cost of $99,100 to taxpayers of Nova Scotia, only to be given, Mr. Speaker, the same information that was already available to him through the Department of Finance, i.e., that talented and professional civil service? End of quote.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do have the greatest respect for the civil service in this province. And, Mr. Speaker, the answer to the question is quite simply that we wanted to ensure not just for our benefit, but for the benefit of the people, that there was, in fact, an independent, arm's-length review of the books so that they could have confidence that we internally were not doing anything to manipulate the figures that they saw, and that what they were going to get was a true picture of the state of the books, and in fact, Mr. Speaker, the sorry state of the books left behind by that government.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative on their first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to say that this caucus does trust the civil service and the Department of Finance. Yeah. But my question, my first supplementary, what information was contained in the Deloitte audit that was not already available from the staff at the Department of Finance?
Good question. Okay.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What the Deloitte report did is look at throughout the departments the budget estimates that were done. They investigated whether or not the projections that were made were legitimate, and what they found, of course, is that there wasn't a surplus, that there was a very significant deficit, which this government or the former government tried to hide. They also pointed out, as we did, that there was no accounting for university funding in that report. And I would point out to the member opposite that that was phase one of the report, and we're looking forward to receiving phase two by the end of the month. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm anxious to see what phase two reveals that we did not know. My second supplementary. Mr. Speaker, our PC government stated that in order to balance the budget 2009-10, it was necessary to redirect funding from offshore petroleum reserve. Your party voted against this idea in May. My question to you is this. How do you face Nova Scotians today and tell them that your government is now considering an amendment to legislation that would achieve the same result, i.e. redirect funding from the petroleum reserve?
The Honourable the Premier.
See, Mr. Speaker, that's where the member opposite misunderstands what happened in the last session of the House. What happened in the last session of the House is that we voted against an incompetent and inept government. That was why we voted against the Act.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Gas regulation in this province has been an expensive mistake, and it's about to get more expensive. This government has decided to pass the buck on gas pricing to the Utility and Review Board. This Premier has repeatedly said this will not cost taxpayers any more money. It's free, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier is he standing by his word that gas regulation will not cost Nova Scotia taxpayers anymore?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What the member opposite should know and never seem to understand about gas regulation is that since gas regulation came into the province, we have been below the national average in gas pricing 45 out of the 52 weeks, according to the survey done by the gasoline retailers. Before gas regulation, we were above the national average two-thirds of the time. I'm sure that even the member opposite can agree, even the leader of the opposition can agree, that that would be a good thing for the people of the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This government is well aware that the price of gas regulation is costing each and every Nova Scotian. In all, we are paying $1 million extra each year, and is about to cost more. The Utility and Review Board is advertising for two jobs to handle this new level of bureaucracy. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is, what is the true cost of punting this decision to the Utility and Review Board?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The gas regulation is moving over to the Utility Review Board. That was something that we promised during the election campaign. It's a commitment we're going to keep. It was also the substance of a question that I recall was asked by the Leader of the Opposition at one point in time in this House. What he needs to understand is that the last report that was done into gas regulation, they should look at, I think it was finding number 12, that said the benefit of gas regulation was that the oil companies were not able to pass along all of their costs to the consumer, and I hope he would agree that that's a good thing for consumers.
The Honourable, the Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier may not want to tell Nova Scotians the full cost of this bad decision, but this weekend we got an idea. The cost of an advisor of petroleum products pricing is about $80,000, and the cost of an analyst is about $65,000. Those are the jobs being advertised by the Utility and Review Board. So my question to the Premier is, how much more is this bad decision going to cost Nova Scotia taxpayers?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The answer to the member's question is it doesn't cost anything more, not because it's free, because it's financed out of the same levy that was put in place originally, and therefore doesn't is cost neutral for the government. So,
the Honourable Member for Cape Breton South.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question today is for the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, on August 25th, Byrony House had to cut the position of its only outreach worker, thereby losing its outreach program. The Transition House also had to cut back the hours of other staff due to funding shortages. Byrony House's outreach program was crucial for women taking the first steps in leaving an abusive situation. Mr. Speaker, it also allowed for one-on-one counseling, which is no longer available as a result of these cuts. Byrony House has not had funding increase for 13 years, Mr. Speaker, and cannot keep pace with rising costs despite the valuable work it is doing. My question to the Minister, will the Minister share her plans for addressing Byrony House's continuing funding shortfall?
Good question. The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for the question from the Honourable Member. And what I would like to inform the Honourable Member is with respect to Bryony House and all the transition houses, they're very important to us and they play a vital role in the province of Nova Scotia, and we support them. And with regards to the core programs that are offered at Bryony House, they are there. So the women and children are protected and are receiving the important care that they deserve to receive. And in fact, we made a commitment to the transition houses, and we have fulfilled that commitment. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton South on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister supports the work of the transition houses, including Byrony House, but is not prepared to give them any additional money this year. Mr. Speaker, before forming government, the NDP called for further funding for transition houses. As Leader of the Opposition, Daryl Dexter said, quote, "I believe there will continue to be a need for new Democrats in the House to stand up and say the services provided by transition houses are needed. They shouldn't be facing a constant lack of funding," close quote. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is simply this. Why won't new Democrats now stand up in the House and say that transition houses shouldn't face a lack of funding and do something about it?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess the Honourable Member hasn't cleaned his ears this afternoon, because the fact is I just said that we are supporting the transition houses, and we have, and we've made that commitment, and we have come forth and we accelerated the funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. The Honourable Member on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, with statements like that, it's obvious to me that the Premier should have put the member from Dartmouth East in that portfolio instead of her. Or, pardon me, Dartmouth North. Whatever. Whatever. Whatever, Mr. Speaker. Well, Dartmouth East, too. But, Mr. Speaker,
member,
Mr. Speaker, because
the
member from Dartmouth North, I believe, genuinely cares about people in this province, and not that minister.
Your
with
question,
statements like that.
Honourable Member, your question to the
Mr.
Minister.
Mr. Speaker, during the last election, the NDP promised $500,000 to all the transition houses and women's centres for just 1 year out of a 4-year mandate. This money will not help Barony House this year, and the one-time funding promise for next year will come nowhere close to providing these organizations with the money they need to provide necessary services for Nova Scotia communities. My question again to the minister, will this government provide a meaningful funding increase to these organizations this year, or if she don't, she should resign?
The honourable order, the order, the honourable minister of community services.
Cabinet, you were the first one.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to point out several facts here. One being is that we're halfway in our year, a budget year, without a budget, and we are compelled to present a former budget of the former government. And let me say that there's some very important and congratulatory news that we received today from the transition houses, because even a month ago I spoke personally with the executive director of Bryony House and had a very constructive and positive conversation on the phone. And today I can proudly say that a press release has been submitted from the Bryony House, and it goes, I'm just going to read a part of it. The Halifax Transition House Association, Bryony House, welcomes the news from Department of Community Services Minister Denise Peterson refused that the province is accelerating its $500,000 commitment to women's shelters. They also mention in here that they have gone 13 years.
Okay. Thank you.
13 years.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, member. Thank you. Okay. If you would table those, please. Okay, thank you. Table the documents. She would table those documents. I'll recognize the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. This government has been talking about a deficit of $590 million, saying that expenditures are steadily increasing. During the election campaign, the Premier's solution to the steadily increasing expenditures was to reduce 1% of government spending. Will the Premier state to us in the House today how he plans to achieve the 1% savings by cutting government expenditures?
The Honourable the Premier.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party knows, the budget will be tabled on Thursday, and her questions will be answered.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier should know that 80% of government expenditures are salary and wages for our hard-working public servants. In a May 27th interview with the Spring Hill Record, the Premier himself cited Communications Nova Scotia as an example of a place to reduce government spending. And I would like to table the article as it appeared in the May 27, 2009 copy of the Spring Hill Record. My question to the Premier is this. Are the non-unionized positions with Communications Nova Scotia being viewed by the NDP government as a place to make cuts?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party for her question. But I want to tell her that when we looked at expenditure management, we decided that we would start where we should start, which is with ourselves. And that's why we reduced the number of seats in cabinet. That's why we went ahead. That's why we went ahead with those items with respect to the number of EAs that we have. That's why we went ahead with the cancellation of the $45,000 retirement allowance. We took a number of very common sense steps in order to be able to make sure that we are pursuing expenditure management appropriately.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the folks at Communications Nova Scotia would be relieved to hear something like that. My second and supplementary question. The PC government was adamant that during these tough economic times, the best way to stimulate the economy was to create jobs, not cut jobs. My question to the Premier is this. Who is advising the Premier on which jobs he should cut? His expert economic panel or his union friends?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I think soon we'll be able to get to a point where they'll be able to put aside the rhetoric of the campaign, and we'll get down to the business of the House. Mr. Speaker, in the last few weeks, I was pleased to be at Irving Shipyards, where the government cooperated in providing a performance guarantee, creating 150 new jobs for that yard, Mr. Speaker. We introduced the manufacturing and processing tax credit, which the Canadian manufacturers and exporters say is going to increase economic activity in our province. We introduced the home construction rebate to stimulate that economy. More jobs, Mr. Speaker, more jobs for Nova Scotians, keeping more young, skilled workers here in our province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. During the election campaign, Nova Scotians heard at length about the NDP promise to keep all emergency rooms open around the clock. Unfortunately, since this government came to power, we've seen over 3,500 hours of ER closures. Today, we have the news that Dr. John Ross has been named the new emergency room advisor and has been charged with providing advice to the government over the next year. My question to the Minister of Health is, has Dr. Ross been given a specific mandate to keep all ERs open 24/7 as promised by the NDP government?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for her question. Mr. Speaker, this government made a commitment to keep ERs open, and we said we would start by hiring an advisor. We're very pleased that Dr. John Ross has agreed to accept this position. And Mr. Speaker, we will see to it that Nova Scotians all across this province get the health care they deserve and the health care they voted for in the provincial election, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, some of the very people that Dr. Ross will consult with have already expressed doubts around the ER closure promise. Last week, the CEO of the Cape Breton District Health Authority stated, and I quote, the ER advisor by themselves won't keep emergency rooms open, unquote. And a year ago, the now interim deputy health minister in his capacity as CEO of the South Shore Health Authority, recommended that the only solution for Fisherman's Memorial ongoing ER closures was to alter its operation so it no longer offered 24/7 service. Mr. Speaker, two of the very individuals that Dr. Ross will have to confer with have already expressed their concerns. So my question to the minister is, given that CEOs have expressed their doubts on ERs publicly, is there a likelihood that you are setting Dr. Ross up for failure from the onset?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Dr. Ross has a mandate to consult broadly. We want to hear from all people in this province, including CEOs, but certainly not limited to CEOs. We'll be speaking with paramedics, people in other healthcare professions, nurse practitioners, and communities, Mr. Speaker. And I am absolutely confident that at the end of the day, we will have a stronger emergency room system in this province, which, after all, is what Nova Scotians want, and it's what Nova Scotians voted for.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians were listening to the NDP government when they promised to keep all ERs open all the time. That was unequivocal. That was a commitment, and that's what we'll hold you to. Mr. Speaker, the minister's announcement today avoided mentioning the commitment in any way. Yeah, Nova Scotians deserve to know whether the campaign promise you made was simply election rhetoric or not. My question to the Minister of Health is the government preparing to move away from its commitment to ensure emergency rooms in this province remain open and functioning fully as emergency care rooms on a 24/7 basis? Yes or no, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Yes.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Premier's front-loaded payments to universities this fiscal year in order to create an artificially large deficit. In March, the PC government made the payments to the universities at the request of the Association of Atlantic Universities to respond to the opportunity to leverage matching federal money to address infrastructure problems. The $256 million at that time the PC government paid to universities was surplus dollars, not deficit dollars or borrowed dollars, as the Premier and his finance minister are now doing. My question to the minister, why prepay the $341 million to the universities now when your independent audit questions this move? Finance.
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I welcome the question from the Honourable Member. I believe that this would be the first question that he's asked in a question period during his time in the House, and I look forward to many more. The one thing that Member and I can probably agree on, Mr. Speaker, is that the previous government's practice of making two university payments in a single year was confusing and complex. And so when we came into office, Mr. Speaker, we were faced with a conundrum about how to unravel the knot that had been tied by the previous government. We are simply restoring the basic principle of one payment in one year. And what, Mr. Speaker, could be wrong with that?
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Mr. Speaker, the real reason that the Premier and his Finance Minister are going further in debt on this one is that they want to make it look that they reduced or eliminated an artificial deficit next year. An artificial deficit that we're going to see on Thursday, I'm sure. The Premier is cooking the books of the province for nothing more than blatant political opportunism. The Minister of Finance has no pressure to make a $341 million prepayment to the universities for this fiscal year, especially when he says we're dealing with a $590 million deficit. My question to the Minister of Finance, with the challenges to addressing declining revenues and increasing expenditures, why create a financial problem by allocating $341 million to universities that this province does not have to spend?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The previous government created a complex and confusing problem when it decided to make two university payments in a single year. Mr. Speaker, by operating in the way that we have proposed, universities now know exactly what to expect. We are restoring the basic principle of making one payment in 1 year, which is the most accountable way of approaching the province's finances, and it helps the province to move faster to live within its means. In other words, Mr. Speaker, it is more stable, it is more accountable, and is more responsible. What exactly is that member complaining about?
The Honourable Member from Argyll on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The NDP have always talked about being transparent in Nova Scotia's finances. But, Mr. Speaker, they are not. They can't even answer whether there's a surplus or a deficit in 08-09. I guess the Minister of Finance knows more about the accounting principles than the CAs within the Department of Finance. The Premier talked about a better deal for Nova Scotians, but I can tell you it sounds more like a raw deal. My question for the Premier, who wins with the better deal that you peddle to Nova Scotians, the political futures of the NDP or the financial standing of our province?
Yes.
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, it is the financial standing of this province, and that's why we are moving ahead to ensure that the members opposite, the drafters of the budget on May 4th, actually take responsibility for the decisions that they made.
The Honourable Member from Bedford, Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Labour and Workforce Development. Mr. Speaker, yesterday hundreds of employees at the Chignecto Central Regional School Board voted overwhelmingly in favour of strike action. As well, Mr. Speaker, provincial negotiations begin next week with the Annapolis Valley Regional School Board. Parents, teachers and children in that area could face the same problems that may face the Chignecto Central School Board. My question to the Minister, what is your government doing to prevent this strike from taking place, and what can we expect from next week's discussions?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think everyone in the chamber recognizes that the process of negotiating agreements is something that's put into legislation, and that taking a strike vote is an important part of that process. And certainly my government and my department are going to respect the that process by staying out of it. We know that there are reasonable people on both sides negotiating, and quite frankly, we have an enviable record when it comes to resolving workplace disputes before they lead to work stoppages in this province. And so we'll await the outcome of this legislative process. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if a strike cannot be averted, it leaves thousands of children without appropriate levels of hygiene at schools. With the ensuing danger of the H1N1 virus and concerns about infection spreading in our schools, this could pose a serious, hazardous environment for children and teachers. Government must be prepared for the situation, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Minister, if a strike occurs, how will your government handle this matter?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, we can't assume the outcome of these negotiations, and we need to wait and see how both sides resolve this in their best interests. But certainly, we have received copies of the plans for H1N1, lowering the risk for students and workers and teachers and all the school boards. And they do have contingency plans in case there is a work stoppage. So I think we need to trust our public health officials that they've given us the best advice, that we need to trust our school boards that they have these contingency plans and they're working towards lowering the risk for workers, staff, and students in the school system. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford, Birch Cove, on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, a strike will disrupt the lives of countless parents who will have to find alternative ways to get their children to and from school every day. Perhaps the Minister and her government can take another page from the previous government and propose to bring in custodians and bus drivers from other provinces to transport the children. My question for the Minister, What is the government's plan to transport children should a strike in fact occur?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Workforce Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is a process, and we're going to follow it. I trust that our school boards are prepared as employers to handle any eventuality, but I also trust the common sense of both sides negotiating, and certainly they recognize that we live in very difficult economic times, and whatever decision they come up with will be in their best interest, and I'm sure the best interest of Nova Scotia. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Much has been done by the NDP government to put together a blue-chip panel of experts on the economy. The four individuals who the Premier said he would be looking for to financial advice. Now, the Premier has heard three of these panelists state that the balance of the budget should not be done next year at the expense of program spending. The NDP were elected upon their steadfast pledge to have a balanced budget, to live within their means, not to cut spending, not to raise taxes. This government was to be all things to all people. That being said, does the Premier still commit to a balanced budget in 2010-2011?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We on this side of the House understand the value of balanced budgets. Of course, we're going to move forward to a balanced budget. And, Mr. Speaker, we made a commitment to the people of this province to live within our means. We don't think that was an unreasonable commitment. We're going to make sure that we deliver on it.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Premier for that elusive answer. The Premier is now refusing to comment and make a promise on balancing the budget. He's saying we're going to live within our means. But the promise was very specific in the Better Deal of 2009, and I can say on the back of the thing, it says live within our means, balance the budget. Balance the budget. Well, you've seen it before, I'm sure.
I'm just wondering...
My question to the Premier is you promised genuine leadership to Nova Scotians. Does that mean are you breaking your word, or are you being elusive?
Member, I'd ask you to table that document. The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I don't know how much clearer I could be. I told the member opposite that we're moving forward to a balanced budget, that, as I pointed out during the election campaign, is the operating principle, which I think all of us agree on. We lived through years and years of a government that wanted to move its commitments around in order to try and say they were in surplus when they were in deficit. Mr. Speaker, we believe in balanced budgets. We think it's important that the province live within its means.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I still don't know really what that answer was. Mr. Speaker, I know that when the Progressive Conservative Party was in government, we said we're going to balance the books. We did, and we did it seven times. Last week, the Finance Minister said he would amend the province's balanced budget legislation to allow for a deficit budget. The Finance Minister then said it's not clear yet whether there would be a deficit in the spring budget. The Premier says there is no deficit, and the Finance Minister is saying that there is a possibility. This is a key campaign promise of the NDP, and now this government is breaking their promises. My question to the Premier, will the Premier now turn around and blame the Finance Minister when he delivers a deficit budget?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Premier. On Thursday, the Minister of Finance, is that what I said? Sorry, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I indicated earlier, on Thursday, the Minister of Finance will deliver his first budget. It will be one that is, of course, largely what was done in May, and the reason for that is quite obvious. Being almost halfway through this year, unfortunately, the previous government decided to be the last government in Canada to bring forward a budget. They brought forward one that was unacceptable, along with measures that were unacceptable to the House. It was defeated, and we're now bringing in a budget which we think actually reflects the state of the finances of the province. I'm sure that the member opposite will be satisfied when he has an opportunity and supply to talk to the Minister of Finance. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. During the election, this government spoke highly about the need of nurse practitioners and ensuring support is there for them so they can deliver much-needed health care in this province. In some parts of Nova Scotia, nurse practitioners have been delivering health care where doctors won't practice. Nurse practitioners are cost-effective and deliver high-quality health care, the two ingredients badly needed in our health care system. So my question to the Minister is, does this government remain committed to ensuring nurse practitioners get the support they need to treat patients in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
I want to thank the Honourable Member for his question. Mr. Speaker, we on this side of the House have always recognized the intrinsic value of nurse practitioners to our health care system. And I'm very pleased to say that I have received services myself through a nurse practitioner, and I could not have had a more satisfactory experience with our health care system. And I would encourage people, if you have an opportunity in your health centers, to see a nurse practitioner. They have an ability to help people look at primary health care, preventative health care, taking more responsibility for good health. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The member for Digby Annapolis on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very glad to hear that response from the minister. But the Island Health Care Center functions in a walk-in clinic and has a total patient load of 1,500 people, and it serves 20 to 30 patients per day. But not anymore, Mr. Speaker. Budget cuts back and reduced support for the nurse practitioner, and the clinic now closes 1.5 hours a day earlier in order to do the paperwork to be completed and appropriate patient referrals to be made. Mr. Speaker, I've been told that the cost saving from the reduction in support for the nurse practitioner amounts to about $100 per week. I don't think I need to tell you, Mr. Speaker, that if one person had to travel off that island to the Digby ER and was lucky enough to find the ER open, that $100 would cost a lot more than what it would if the nurse practitioner was getting it. So my question to the minister, why is the minister standing idly by when patients of Digby Neck, Long and Briar Islands are forced to seek out more expensive health care, all for the sake of a $100 per week savings?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you know, the Digby Neck Briar Island Clinic is a fine example of the kinds of innovation that we can bring to our healthcare system. And the use of both paramedics and nurse practitioners in that area is something that we will seriously look at expanding into other parts of the province, Mr. Speaker. And with respect to the difficulties that the Honourable Member has just raised, this is the first that this has been brought to my attention, Mr. Speaker, and I would be very happy to hear more from the Honourable Member and have an opportunity to look into what we can do to support that clinic.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Minister, because that was my final question. Will the Minister step in and reinstate the support needed for the nurse practitioner at Islands Health Centre so that we can truly create a more sustainable and cost-effective health care system in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as I said, I'd be happy to speak further with the member and have my staff look into the problem that he's identified. Thank you.
The Honourable Member from Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of the Environment. Mr. Speaker, recently there has been issues surrounding blue-green algae polluting sections of waterways in western Nova Scotia. There's speculation that some mink farms in the area are not being properly maintained, and that pollution is contaminating local water courses. So my first question to the minister is, what is your department doing to rectify this problem?
The Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I welcome the question here today. And first of all, it's an honor to stand at this historical moment in this House. And I welcome the question. And the first thing that we did, Mr. Speaker, was to go down and visit with the people there and have an understanding of the issues. One of the first things that we've done as the Environment Minister is talking about the water was to have a more thorough monitoring of testing done on that water source, the Carlton water source. And we are working with the Minister of Agriculture, and there is ongoing process to review the legislation around that particular fur farm. Thank you.
The Honourable Member from Clare on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My next question is for the Minister of the for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia is the largest mink fur producer in Canada. This industry generates considerable economic developments to the region. However, recently the MLA from Yarmouth stated that a moratorium on future fur farms licenses in the area is needed. The people of this area and those within the industry deserve clarification, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Minister of Agriculture, is your department planning a moratorium on new mink farms in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The rules and regulation around this industry are antiquated and are in serious need of changes. Since the NDP government so heartily campaigned on change, my next question to the Minister is, what changes can mink farmers expect to these out-of-date regulations?
It's directed to which minister?
Minister of Agriculture.
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And certainly the member's question is appropriate. The legislation around mink farms or fur farms generally is somewhat antiquated. The Department of Agriculture has been working with the mink industry over the past year or so in developing new regulation for the industry. We're hopeful that regulation would be available or ready by the spring, and we're not positive if it can be, but we're hoping it will be. I've asked my staff to look at the application process when you apply for permit for a mink farm, and which is, in my view, somewhat lacking. What we're looking at is the possibility of legislation that could come to the House this fall that would give, I think, more power to the minister in the short term to address some of these issues by spring, hopefully, we'll have regulation that would bring the industry into the 21st century.
Thank you. The Honourable Member from Cumberland South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is through you, Mr. Speaker, is through the Minister of Department of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. As the Minister would be aware, a tender has been awarded for Trunk 4 through Wentworth Valley from Route 368 to Swallow Road. It's been awarded. Mr. Speaker, work is underway today. And is the Minister be well aware as well that this trunk is an overflow road in the event of problems on the Cobblewood Pass, which will see thousands of cars and trucks per day? Mr. Speaker, it's come to our attention, my attention, the members of the Wentworth Valley community, that as a result of this repaving project, that the road itself will be significantly narrowed, the paved portion, the turning lanes will be eliminated, passing lanes will be eliminated, and the paved shoulder will be eliminated. Mr. Speaker, this will compromise the safety of motorists and the community it affects. The community is very upset that no consultation from anyone from the Department of Transportation took place. My question to the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal Why have you taken such a drastic decision with no public consultation?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank the member opposite for the question. I think the member is quite well aware of the fact, Mr. Speaker, that is a road that I'm on regularly in the summertime. And let me tell you, if the need arises this winter, if and when the Cobblewood Pass is closed, the Wentworth Valley, Death Valley as it was called, unfortunately, for so many long years, the old number 4 will be maintained up to the quality of roads that are in this province. Mr. Speaker, I'm aware of the fact that I was proud enough to sign a tender that the 8 kilometres around Mahoney's Corner was going to be paved. That was an important part of the recommendations that came forward in light of the fact that when the difficulties last year, when the Cobblewood Pass was closed, the Wentworth Valley Highway needed that work. Also, Mr. Speaker, I want you to know that part of the decision, of course, comes down to the fact that there was a suggestion that we would no longer have passing lanes on the Wentworth Highway. That will not be the case, Mr. Speaker. I've reviewed that situation with the staff. I want the member to reassure the people who live in that constituency and the people who live on the Wentworth Highway that there will be passing lanes, because if or when the Cobblewood Pass is closed, Mr. Speaker, there will be the need to make sure that those trucks who are using that road are using a proper upgraded road. And I know in personal experience traveling that road in the past when it was the highway, it is a necessity to have passing lanes. The trucks will regularly use this highway if the Cobblewood Pass is closed. I thank the member for bringing it to my attention. Hopefully this information will be passed on to his constituents.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I can tell the Honourable Minister, when I came through there yesterday, indeed that passing lane was marked and they were in the process of getting ready to eliminate it at that time. So the Minister may make him on a phone call to stop that process. In 2008, a safety review was done at the Cobblewood Pass, and several proposed changes were recommended. We received all those recommendations. In fact, we're implementing those changes at the change of government. Mr. Speaker, at no time was there any suggestion of changing Trunk 4, has been stated here today. In fact, enhanced service was recommended. My question, Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal, is this government sacrificing public safety for dollars?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I know that the member, of course, at one time had the honour to work with the people in the Transportation Department. And as he well knows, that we're dealing with professional people who very clearly look at the consequences when it comes to highway safety. I want the member also to know that during those first couple of weeks when I had the responsibility, and I thank him for his congratulatory note at that time, to take on this responsibility, the absolute first question that I asked the deputy that first time we sat down together and had a coffee was, what's the situation on the recommendations for the Cobblewood Pass? One of those recommendations, of course, was that the Wentworth Highway was to be maintained because it could be used in difficult times. Among those recommendations, there was no recommendation that there would be the passing lanes eliminated. That was not one of those recommendations from my memory. My memory could fail me in this situation, but let me assure you, that is an important highway. That highway will be continue to be maintained. It is a highway, for example, over the Thanksgiving weekend, no reflection on the 104, no reflection on the Cobblewood Pass. That's a highway of my choice, and I'll assure you that I will make sure that it is maintained to the proper standards that Nova Scotians come to expect in this province.
The Honourable Member for Cumberland South on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and my final supplement to the Minister. I thank the Minister for the answer. Mr. Minister, will you conduct a review of this decision regarding the tender for Trunk 4 and ensure that Trunk 4 is maintained to the level of its current engineered design, thereby ensuring the safety of the travelling public and the community of Wentworth, and come with me to meet with the people in Wentworth and explain to them what changes are taking place and why?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And to the member opposite, I know the member, of course, has responded to the issues in the past. When I sat in that side, invited into my community, I welcome the opportunity to go anywhere with any members opposite and members of this side of the House. And I compliment the members opposite who've come to my office and made sure that their points of view are known. I've been in Wentworth before, of course, on school issues, and that's, of course, the initiative of the member from Cumberland South. And at any time, if it fits in with our schedule, with the exception, I suppose, of Monday evenings, I'd be willing to very clearly look at what the situation is in Wentworth Highway, whether they're visiting in their school or whatever. I know that member is concerned about the safety of that road. That road will be safe this winter. Hopefully it'll be safe this Thanksgiving weekend when I use it again. It's an important part of the highway structure of this province. It is going to be maintained in a safe fashion with proper turning lanes, proper shoulders, and proper passing lanes.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, on August 30, 2009, the weather across our great province was incredible. The sky was clear, the sun was shining brightly. It was a perfect day to get out with friends, family, neighbours, and enjoy great local food and fun in Nova Scotia. One might say it was the perfect day for a picnic, Mr. Speaker. And yet, Mr. Speaker, there was no picnic. The picnic was called off by government, and they cancelled the food, the music, the promotion of growing and processing local food for all Nova Scotians to have that fine August day. My question to the Minister, why was the incredible picnic cancelled?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to be clear to the member asking the question that there's the old adage, better safe than sorry. My staff came to me, and I want the member and all members of the House to be clear. This initiative of the Incredible Picnic was an important initiative of my department. Make no mistake. When my staff came to me with concerns for canceling the Incredible Picnic for the second time, I can tell you that was not an easy request on their part, but they were concerned. So, Mr. Speaker, we thought in the best interest with the impending storm that was coming that for all people concerned, the best thing would be to cancel the picnic.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this initiative was put forward by the previous government that really had a positive effect on the local food production. It is an exceptional way, in fact, to promote local agriculture products, provides Nova Scotians with a sense of the hard work and dedication that goes with producing food for our province. While potential bad weather must be taken into account, many locations were left with no alternate indoor venues to turn to if the weather became bad. My question to the Minister, why did your government not arrange for all the picnic venues to have an alternate indoor location?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, it's called a picnic. So as much as it was possible to have the event in the outdoors, and in Nova Scotia, we like to think as much as possible that we do have good weather. And I would say, as someone who has tried to make hay the last 3 or 4 years, we've had wet summers, so I'm well aware. But look, we plan this weeks ahead, and so you have to take the weather as it comes. I would say that I will take it under advisement in the future to try to have inside venues. I'm thinking that may be difficult, but to use it as a backup plan, I can see that it may cause some problems for producers. But we'd be glad to take a look at it. But the initiative was designed to be a picnic that people could be outdoors with their families, enjoy local Nova Scotia produce, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Mr. Minister, for that commitment. And I'm sure if funding keeps coming to keep our arenas open, that could be one possible place. But last week, in the speech from the throne, there was little mention of agriculture as a priority for this government. In fact, Mr. Speaker, there were only two sentences devoted to an important sector of Nova Scotia's economy. I suppose we can expect this to be the status quo when it comes to this government's plan for agriculture. Mr. Speaker, many producers involved in the picnic supplied goods at their own expense. Some farmers may not return. Future contributors could be deterred from participating in future provincial events. My question to the Minister, what will you do to ensure that farmers and producers continue to take part in future incredible picnics?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Look, I can only guarantee the member that we are still interested in pursuing the incredible picnic next year. We don't have any intention of trying to control the weather. The producers who participate in this will be doing this, on the idea that they're trying to advertise their own products, and if it turns out that the weather doesn't show up as helpful, they may have to have an alternate plan for themselves as well. But as much as it's possible to mitigate against disaster, we'll see what we can do, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Agriculture. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Agriculture had promised during an election campaign $2 million that the previous government had put up for the Cattle Farmers Association. My question to the Minister, where's the $2 million?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Mr. Speaker.
Order. The time for oral question period has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on legislative television.